Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. Well, folks, I fully intended to begin this week's show by breaking down in granular detail Brooks Koepka's first PGA Tour round since spring 2022. But Rex, it'd be borderline irresponsible, reckless even, if we started anywhere other than Justin Rose, who at the age of 45 is a seven-shot winner at the Farmers Insurance Open, shattered the new tournament scoring record over 72 holes. What a performance by the class.
Wire. Yeah, everything about it was impressive. And I'm just going to apologize in advance. You've had a bit of a travel day, so I'm going to go ahead and step in for you right now. Sorry, he may stumble a little bit. He may mumble. He had some flight issues coming from Florida. He's out.
No one cares. That's the beauty. Is I found out that absolutely no one cares. My wife doesn't care. My kids don't care. The audience doesn't care. Producer Fred doesn't care. You certainly don't care.
Yeah, I don't care. No, it would be an injustice not to start with Justin Rose. What an amazing week for him to have won there, not once, but twice. And this is such a big and burly golf course. It was funny thinking about Harris English last year winning with single digits. That didn't look like the same golf course. And we're going to have Todd Lewis on in a little bit. I was out earlier in the week. It's as nice as I've ever seen San Diego. It wasn't a breath of wind. The greens were very receptive, but still, what a performance. And I'm putting together a buddy's trip for the summer when it warms up, if it ever warms up. So I'm putting together a buddy's trip. And as I start going down Justin Rose's schedule, yes, you'll be invited.
Am I coming?
Sure. But I'm putting this trip together. He's got 13 PGA Tour victories now. And if you went to almost all of those victories, it would make probably the best buddy's trip. Let's do this. Twice, Torrey Pines, Mirrorfield Village at the Memorial, Pebble Beach, of course, Congressional, Marion for the U.S. Open, Doral, Aronimink, Colonial. You can keep going. He only wins at the absolute best golf courses. And at 45 years old, it's so much fun to watch because I think you and I are probably as guilty as anyone about this. When we see a player like a Michael Brennan, who won last year in Utah and essentially his first PGA Tour start, and you watch the way he can dismantle a golf course, Chris Goddard earlier this season at the Sony Open, that is very enjoyable golf. Everyone is drawn to that type of golf, but that's not Rosie. He's so clinical. He's so methodical, and he's gotten so much better as time has went on. It was an amazing victory.
So I do want to temper like a little bit of the age discussion. Like Justin Rose is 45. It's not like we're talking Tom Watson trying to will himself to the Claret Jug at the 2009 Open. Like we've all seen the social clips of Justin Rose's mobile trailer, the hyperbaric chamber, you know, the red light machine. It's clear that he puts so much time, effort, and energy into his body, which he needs to if you're going to compete against the Michael Brennans and Michael Thorbjornsons and Luke Clantons of the world, who are just bigger, stronger, faster. You know, all of the above. What I think is most respected about Justin Rose that really needs to be celebrated is his desire. How after 30 years of doing this, he still wants more. He's still willing to put in the sacrifices. He's still willing to put in the time to be great. To me, that's unique. Where at this age, I think it'd be easy to fade away and go do something else. He had some back issues that he was struggling with in the late 2010s, basically after he ascended to world number one into the early 2020s, where it looked like, okay, maybe his best golf is behind him. And he's not going to be as competitive on a week-to-week basis, but he doesn't need to. He's put so much time and emphasis in his body that he can map out the calendar that works for him and try to peak. And it's clear the physical skills are there. Now it's just making sure the body maintains throughout the course of the year, and then his mental game is sharp as well.
And this one stands out. Again, 13 PGA Tour victories, what he has done globally, especially on the DP World Tour, what he's done in the Ryder Cup for Team Europe. But this one does stand out. Of those 12 other victories on the PGA Tour, he had never won by more than three strokes. This was a blowout. He was leading by eight at one point. He ended up coming home with a touchdown margin of victory. It was a wildly impressive performance. And I did want to touch on the stuff that you sort of glossed over a little bit. He has invested so much into making sure that his body is at top physical form. The trailer, or I don't even know what you call it, the RV, which I think everyone has kind of seen the inside of it now, it's no small thing. It is a massive expense. I immediately thought of everything that we hear that LeBron James does to make sure that he's at peak physical form at 40 plus years old to play in the NBA. Wildly different scenario. I understand that. But supposedly LeBron James spends millions of dollars every year to make sure everything he puts into his body and everything he does for his body keeps him in top physical shape. And I think Justin Rose would be the comp here. You're right. He had those back injuries, but by and large, he's been a consistent performer year in and year out. And I mean, the part that stands out, he called it a clinic. He called his ball striking a clinic, which is pretty cool if you can get a PGA Tour player to do the humblest of brag saying that I put on a clinic.
It's an absolute stripe show.
It was an absolute stripe show. He was second in the field in strokes gained tee to green, but it's putting. It's always going to be his putting. If you look most weeks at in and out, he's always going to be in the top 10, 15 at the worst when it comes to strokes gained tee to green. But if he can do what he did this week, he was 10th in strokes gained putting. You win by 7 strokes. And again, this is another testament. I think we've mentioned his name probably more than anyone else on the podcast in the last few months, of Phil Kenyon's work. That if you get a player who is wired a very specific way, and I think in a lot of ways, Scottie Scheffler and Rosie are wired the same way, where it is such a pursuit of perfection, where nothing stands in their way, and there's not a stone that is left unturned. You put them with someone that has the analytical mind, like Phil Kenyon has, where he can, this isn't about feel, this isn't about my putting lesson with Brad Faxon that time, where he just sort of shrugged his shoulders and said, I don't know, he just had to feel it. It's so much more than that, and I think this is the result. And he also works with a statistician who is probably the best in the business, Mark Hortz. I mean, he is a genius. I was actually spent a lot of time talking with Mark last week. And you can see the way he plots his way around the golf course, especially that golf course, the South Court.
Yeah, I love that LeBron comp because it's not just a financial investment that you're making into your body, mm-hmm. into your mind, and trying to prolong your career. There's something physiological, there's something psychological to what you're trying to do too. And that's what I was trying to point out with what is so respected about him is his desire at this stage. He's not just like cobbling together, you know, just a little team that's helping him get closer to PGA Tour Champions age. Like he's reunited with his caddy, Mark Fulcher, with whom he's had the most success. He has Mark Blackburn, one of the best swing coaches on the planet. He's got a performance coach. He has a statistician. He has a physical trainer, a team of physiotherapists to try and get his body in mind in the best position possible. He has a great supporting cast around him, not just his manager, but his wife is so instrumental in his career as well. Like he is putting a lot into it. And that's what he said to the press over the past couple of days at Torrey Pines as well. Like, why am I still doing this? Because I still enjoy the work. He had a great quote last year. Remember, he was the 18 and the 36 hole leader at the Masters, and he talked about how his desire is still there, and he knows that because he's practicing late at night. And if he wants to go out at 4, 5, 6 o'clock and go play 9, 18, 27 holes, that is still a sign to him that he wants to be out there and he's still enjoying the pursuit. He said this past week at Torrey Pines, he's trying to create memories at this point in his career. Isn't that great? He's not trying to, you know, to stockpile. He's not trying to get to 15 wins or 20 wins. He's trying to make memories. He's trying to be a part of big moments, whether it's in a major championship or a Ryder Cup. I just think it's a great way to look at it. Instead of being bogged down in stats or numbers, it's feelings, it's moments, it's memories. It's trying to make all of the hard work and sacrifice and effort that he is putting in on a daily basis with his exorbitant number of team members that he has. I think that's a pretty cool way to look at it.
And I love the way he stayed locked in on Sunday. And again, wire to wire, every day he built his lead. It's easy to get into that final round and just think to yourself, I just have to play a prevent defense here. I just need to make sure that I don't do anything stupid. And again, you can do something really stupid on that South course. You can imagine a hole where there is a 3 or 4 shot swing. But he told Amanda Baleonis after the round that he's picked a couple things to fixate on. One, he knew what the scoring record was, which is fascinating because to me, it seems to me a player doesn't want to know something like that. That's just one more thing that can distract him, but it was something he stayed locked in on and wanted to make sure, okay, I need to maintain this. He talked about keeping to his routine every single day. He did the same thing at night that he did when he showed up in the morning, that he did for lunch, that he did when he left the golf course. We can just sit here and say rinse and repeat when it comes to he and Scottie Scheffler. This is the pursuit of greatness. This is how you put yourself in a position where you can win a PGA Tour event against players who are half your age by 7 strokes.
I will say one thing that the CBS broadcast kept bringing up is boy, it seems like Justin Rose is playing as well as he ever has. And Fuchs made the comment to CBS's Amanda Baleonis afterward, like, I still think his best golf can be ahead of him. I think that's a little negligent of what Justin Rose has accomplished over the previous 2 decades, right? Like, I think it's pretty easy to forget how awesome this guy was in the mid-2010s, the early 2010s. I mean, you mentioned the golf courses on which he has won. I mean, he was a top two or three player on the PGA Tour statistically, you know, great through the bag. Yes, he's hitting it farther now than he ever has, but that's a byproduct of, again, all of that work on his body, but also technology, which has helped him prolong his career. He doesn't statistically do anything better now than he did in his heyday, but that's not the point. Again, the point is at the age of 45, it's really unrealistic to expect him to sustain that level of excellence on a week-to-week basis. No one at the top level is doing that. The game is too deep. It's too young. It's too power-focused for that sort of consistency. But if you're Justin Rose, you know how to peak. You know how to play difficult golf courses. You can rely on an incredibly high golf course IQ, an approach game that certainly seems like it's back to peak Justin Rose form again, mid-2010s. That is still enough, Rex, I think, in 2026 to make it for a very memorable year. Being able to pop up three or four times, typically when the golf courses are going to be the most difficult, typically when the pressure is going to be at its highest because he has the most experience to draw on, I think that's a pretty good resume that he could put together for the year.
That's a fair comment, I think, to make. You're right. When you look at what he's accomplished in his career, it's hard to imagine how he's able to better that. Although you pointed out the runner-up at the Masters. If anyone has one arm truly in a green jacket, it would be Justin Rose. If you look over the course of his career, distance-wise, he was 35th in that field at Torrey Pines, which is a bomber's golf course, which is squarely middle of the pack. And I think that should be encouraging to so many other players. If you're a Jordan Spieth or a player that probably is right there in the middle of the pack with them, you can probably take a lot from this particular victory. The idea being that on a course that should favor the bombers, probably more so than maybe any other course on the PGA Tour, he was able to step up and execute better than anyone else. I will say, and it's sort of over the last 2 days, I was thinking to myself, we're still waiting for a decision from European Ryder Cup team about who's going to be the captain next time around. Ooh. I think you and I both assume it's going to be Luke Donald for a third time. I'm guessing it's Luke's decision to either take it or give it away. At this point, I would be actually surprised if he doesn't, but it's a demanding job. I could see how he was probably going to have a hard decision, hard conversation with his family about whether if he should do it or not. If it's not Luke, let's be honest, my mind immediately went to Rosie. The idea being that, well,
but it can't be.
You would end up in the exact same situation with Keegan last year, where you have a captain that's playing so well that he probably should be on the team, but he wouldn't put himself on the team because in the modern era, he knows he can't do both. You can't be a playing captain. So now, at the very least, you're now putting it 3 years away where he would captain. So it sets up interesting scenarios for Rosie, just not this year, but going into the future, because he still seems to have so much good golf left.
I mean, it would be such an own goal by the European Ryder Cup team to put a player who is very squarely inside the top 10 in the world rankings. It actually would have been even more of a precedent than what Keegan Bradley had. Keegan Bradley was like 15th or 16th in the world ranking when he was announced in a shocking move by the PGA of America to be the next U.S. Ryder Cup captain. Justin Rose, after winning the playoff event in Memphis in August, now winning a full field event on the PGA Tour squarely inside the top 10. It's setting up clearly for Luke Donald to try and become the first player to go to win three consecutive Ryder Cups. Francesco Molinari, I think, would be the other player if Justin Rose has to recuse himself from the situation because, I'm sorry, I'm playing a little bit too well to be considered. I think Francesco Molinari, if Luke Donald does not want to do it, I think makes a lot of sense as well.
Yeah, that was going to be my follow-up, that if not Rosie, like, again, we're assuming that Luke Donald may not do it. He just may choose that after two times, he feels like it's time to move on. If that's the case, after Rosie, you start looking way off into the future. Obviously, Rory is going to get his turn, but if the LIV players probably aren't going to be in line for that job, and it doesn't seem in the short term they will be, I mean, it's got to be Rosie, it's got to be Francesco, and then it starts to get a little dry quick.
Yeah, which I do think, just on the LIV point real quick, I do think it's a shame if we don't have a Ian Poulter, a Sergio Garcia, a Lee Westwood, a Henrik Stenson, all of those players not being a captain at some point. But again, you keep kicking this further down the line. Justin Rose, a top 10 player in the world, a Ryder Cup legend, deserves his shot as well. All of a sudden, Rory McIlroy is going to be of age before you know it in the 2030s as well. Rex, we somehow went 15 minutes without talking about the biggest story of the week. Again, that was no disrespect to Justin Rose, but everyone heading into Farmers Insurance Open week was keyed in on one player and one player only. That player was Brooks Koepka. It was the reason why you flew to San Diego for about 4 days, attended his press conference, talked to Brooks, soaked up the atmosphere for Thursday's opening round. Officially, it was a tie for 56th in what was Brooks Koepka's first PGA Tour round since March 2022. Quite frankly, it was his first competitive round anywhere since early October, so I think some rust was apparent. Give me some positives and negatives as it relates to Brooks's return.
I think the positive was first the press conference on Tuesday. You and I addressed this on the podcast. We talked about it on Golf Today and Golf Central. The idea that he won the press conference, we use that all the time when we talk about football coaches. But I do believe that Brooks sat in that chair and did what he had to do. He took the hard questions and he showed a level of contrition that I admitted, I didn't think he had it. Let's face it. The player that left the PGA Tour in 2022, I don't think anybody was going to say is contrite. I didn't think that was going to be one of the 14 clubs in his bag. And he did a really good job. And that press conference and the rest of the week, he had a really good interview with Todd Lewis, who we're going to have on in a little while on following his round on Thursday. I think some of the things he actually said following his round on Thursday were even more interesting because he was asked point blank why he was nervous for that first round. And it was really because I care. Because I care about not just playing well, not just being back on the PGA Tour, but I care about what people think about me. That's not the guy that left the PGA Tour in 2022.
Never heard Brooks Koepka say that. In fact, I think we've only heard the inverse. We've only heard the opposite, that I don't care what you think about me. I'm just a Terminator.
I don't care what you think about me. I'm a cyborg. I don't care about this particular tournament because it's not a major championship. I don't care about this particular tour because I can get more money on that tour. All of those things that made him who he was when he left. And I'm not even making the slightest suggestion that it was disingenuous, because I truly believe that what has transpired over the last 3.5 years has been humbling. He didn't play good golf last year at all on LIV. He really hasn't been competitive in the majors for the better part of 2 years, I guess, going back to the PGA Championship, of course, that he won after joining LIV. He hasn't been really relative on the grand scale of things since joining LIV Golf. All of those things coalesce to deliver the player that sat in front of the media on Tuesday and was contrite and understood that, look, there is a punishment for me coming back and I have to do certain things that the PGA Tour dictated, and I'm perfectly fine with that. That's the first positive.
Which I think is interesting, because he did sound humble. He did sound grateful. He did sound appreciative. And I think that was understandable. Keep in mind, we weren't privy to that conversation that he had with Brian Rolapp when they were sort of hammering out what was going to be eventually known as the returning member program. But it's pretty clear that Brooks Koepka could have been sent to timeout. He could have been put in the penalty box for a year, if not longer. And Tiger Woods wanted him back. Brian Rolapp wanted him back. The policy board members who eventually signed off on it wanted it back. So I think he was ultimately grateful and appreciative to be back. I was interested to see, though, Rex, the PGA Tour basically trotted Brooks Koepka out. They trotted him out first thing on Tuesday. He did every single interview with Todd Lewis afterward. On Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, all four tournament rounds, he either spoke with an interviewer afterward, whether Amanda Baliones or Todd Lewis, or even on Saturday, he was brought into the booth on CBS, even after three putting from 4 feet on his final hole of the day. That clearly had to have been a conscious effort by the PGA Tour to trot out the first LIV reverse defector and be like, look, here's our guy. Here's our five-time major winner who we all wanted desperately. We had this carve out this for four players, and we got him back. We're happy he's back. And now I think it's up to him. I think he handled the personal aspect, the interactions with the players, the interactions with the fans, the interaction with the media. I think he handled that great. Now it's up to Brooks, the player, to do his part as well, and the reason why the tour wanted him back.
And you talk about the positives and the negatives. The other huge positive is the impact he had on this event. And we've talked at length about the returning member program and how the PGA Tour and Brian Rolapp and Tiger Woods really got it right all the way down to the minutia, all the way down to the details. The fact that he cannot get sponsors exemptions into signature events, and that if you're going to make any hay, if you're going to get this done, you have to do it in the full field, non-signature events like this event, like next week or this week in Phoenix, where you will be. It's only going to help those events so dramatically, because I really felt like, and I think I said this on the podcast on Wednesday, I haven't sat in a press conference that really felt like a Tiger Woods press conference in a long time. And that's what it felt like. You saw it on Thursday and Friday with ESPN running the Thursday and Friday early round coverage on linear ESPN. That's the first time in two decades. There was carve outs on Saturday and Sunday because he teed off on the back nine because he was on the back half of the field. They had Johnson Wagner walking with him on Sunday afternoon. Like, you really made a point of leaning into, this is a star and we're going to stay with this star. You get an idea of the impact he could have all season long.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. The potential boost that he would have for full field events. This week in Phoenix, I don't think he necessarily needed any help. But look, the Cognizant Classic, they have not had great participation from the bevy of stars that they have living in South Florida. He's already committed there. You would think we're probably going to see him at the Valspar Championship as well in Tampa, a tournament he has played previously. It comes in the back end of the Players Championship. He's going to need to try to accrue FedEx Cup points. And so, yeah, like we're going to see Brooks Koepka in markets in which he does not typically play, which I think is great for the PGA Tour. Also, you mentioned the ESPN. I think I need to work on my radio voice, my TV voice, Rex. They used a cutout, Golf Channel did. They used a cutout from our podcast in the commercial promoting Brooks Koepka's return. I need to work on that. Need to enunciate a little bit better. I will throw one more positive as it relates to Brooks Koepka's play, although it was a little bit uneven at times. He did birdie two of the last five holes on Friday to make the cut. That was important, just getting four competitive rounds. Again, he had not played since the Dunhill Links in early October. And I thought iron play. That was the big issue last year. He was so uneven, round to round, tournament to tournament. I know Liv has a little bit of questionable stats, but it was apparent that even against the short fields, he was not performing well in that department. He was pretty sharp through the bag with the irons, particularly with his wedges. He was 14th in proximity to hole over the three rounds that were counting at Torrey Pines. Seemed to have pretty good control of his golf ball. How about negatively? I think it's pretty clear it starts and ends with putting.
Yeah, you said his ball striking was the highlight here when you look at his game. If we're going back in between the ropes, 11th strokes gained tee to green. He actually hit some really good iron shots as the week went by, which is interesting because, as we pointed out, the golf courses they probably play on LIV Golf, I don't think any of them are going to be as demanding as the South Course. So this isn't like even Justin Rose referred to last week at the American Express, where Justin Rose missed the cut, by the way. He referred to it as a warm-up. I think you and I called it spring training. Brooks didn't have that luxury. He was thrown right into, I don't want to call it the World Series, but certainly.
I mean, he could have played. He could have played the American Express and decided not to.
Yes, that's true. This felt more like a divisional series, but you're right. It was the putting. He finished dead last in the field in putting. He actually, I think he went Saturday night, CBS reported. He went over to the Scotty Cameron studio just to try to figure out where he is with his alignment. My guess is it'll be vastly improved when he gets to Phoenix this week. It's an event where he's won. They don't have POA greens. The greens at TPC Scottsdale are absolutely perfect. Not making excuses for him. A lot of guys don't like to putt on POA greens. It's just the way it is. If you aren't hitting it absolutely perfect, you're probably going to struggle a little bit. I think this week in Phoenix will be a better litmus test on that front.
Yeah. TPC Scottsdale is the site of Brooks Koepka's first PGA Tour victory back in 2015. I don't think you could pin it all, though, on the putting, though, Rex. Although he was last in the field, although he lost seven strokes to the field, he was 19 shots back of eventual winner Justin Rose. He was 12 shots back of the group that defined the sort of the B flight. It was clear that he wasn't sharp enough in his season opener in 2026. Yes, are there reasons for that? Absolutely. But he was not sharp enough. I think it was just a very, very so-so pedestrian performance for Brooks Koepka out of the gate. And I think big picture now, when you zoom out, it is kind of important. Finishing T56 does not come with a whole lot of FedEx Cup points. That's significant because now he needs to do something this week at the WM Phoenix Open, or all of a sudden he's starting in a deficit as we get really into the heart of the spring and the meat of the PGA Tour schedule. Guys like Pearson Cootie, Jake Knapp, Sahith Thagal, who's had a couple of good weeks in California so far. All of those players are rising in the swing five, which then gets you into the signature events. Brooks Koepka, again, cannot receive sponsor exemptions into those signature events, the events that define the PGA Tour season. So he's going to have to mop up in the full field events, or he's going to not be playing against the Rorys and the Scotties and the players that we really want to see Brooks Koepka, height of power, five-time major champion winner, actually go up against.
And that's important. You're absolutely right. He has to have his eye on that, understanding how it's just crucial if you're a player to be able to get into the signature events. Because if not, you're playing from behind. You're giving the rest of the field such a huge advantage because they get so many more points playing in those events. All top five finishes, all top 10 finishes aren't created equal on the PGA Tour. That's a perfect example. I will say he has a little bit more cushion than most people would in this particular case. He is qualified for the Players' Championship. He's qualified for the majors. Those would help out if he did anything at all in them. But you're right. And I'll go back to what we just touched on. I don't think you can overstate how this important this is going to be for the Cognizants and the Valspars and anywhere else he lands in this pursuit of trying to break through and get into that upper echelon.
Yeah, we're not talking FedEx Cup points in terms of trying to keep his PGA Tour card. He is exempt from the PGA Tour through 2028 by virtue of his win at the PGA a couple of years ago. He also would be then exempt into the signature events next year. Could receive sponsor exemptions next year. That was a one-time, one-year rule as it relates to Brooks Koepka. And so if you want to see him at the Travelers Championship, you want to see him at the RBC Heritage, you want to see him at the Memorial, needs to play a little bit better as the calendar moves into February and March. All right, we got your phone calls. We read your emails and texts. I got your facts. By popular demand, Todd Lewis is rejoining the program. That's coming up after this short break. And for this Boots on the Ground segment, we are pleased to be joined once again by Golf Channel insider Todd Lewis. And T-Lew, you just got done talking with Farmers Insurance Open champion Justin Rose. What'd you want to know?
I wanted to know how he would compare himself as a player now to the player that won on the PGA Tour for the very first time in 2010 when he won the Memorial at Muirfield Village. He was 29 then. And he said, you know, I obviously I wasn't as experienced. I wasn't or haven't been in the arena as much as I have now. So I guess more than anything, it's just a simple matter of confidence and belief, which you don't hear a lot of 45-year-olds say out here on the PGA Tour because, I mean, it's a young player's game generally. But he is obviously flipping the script. He has become such a complete player. I mean, for him to come out here and break the tournament 72-hole scoring record and do it in commanding fashion, start of the day with a 6-shot lead, finish the day winning by 7, I mean, he is such a strong player through the bag right now. I think what's interesting is I was also curious, and he answered this pretty well, about his strategy and his attitude heading into this final day with a 6-shot lead. We saw this last year with Rory McIlroy as he hit the second 9 at Augusta National with a 4-shot lead. Sometimes players, when they have a lead, aren't trying to win. They're trying not to lose. And then all of a sudden, they're playing defensive. They're not playing their game. And then we saw what happened with Rory. Ultimately, he did win in a playoff, coincidentally, against Justin Rose, but Justin today, or Sunday rather, he did not have that try not to lose this tournament mentality. He played basically the same game plan that he had the previous 3 days here on the South Course, or 2 days, I should say, on the South Course. So he felt confident where he was placing the ball, didn't attack when he shouldn't. So he just played such a beautiful game this entire week and was in control of this tournament from the get-go.
I love the fact that you pointed out he's so much more of a complete player than he was, even maybe 5 years ago. If you look at his short game, you look at his putting. Now, you and I are men of a certain age. When you look at his longevity, it's really amazing. I mean, it's easy to skip past the idea that he's 45 and he's competing against all of these young players, but he's largely been healthy. He's largely gotten better physically year by year. He's a fine wine, man.
Yeah, and it's not by simple genetics, too. He works at it. I mean, he's in the weight room. He's definitely making sure that his body is taken care of. I mean, I'm not saying he's Vijay Singh where he just lives on the range, but he puts a lot of work into his game, at least from what I've seen when he shows up at a PGA Tour event. He's working with Mark Blackburn. He's got all kinds of sticks and poles, and he's making sure his swing is on plane when he's on the range. And then, of course, when he works with Phil Kenyon with his putting, who's also a technical instructor, they have gadgets and gizmos on the putting surface as well. But he's very analytical and technical, and I think that keeps him very sharp. And he definitely works very, very hard, a lot harder than some of the 20-year-olds that I see out here on the PGA Tour.
T-Lew, we had a big controversy with the Pro Football Hall of Fame over the past week with Bill Belichick somehow not getting in to Canton on the first ballot, apparently with some former executives, some former media members aggrieved at Bill Belichick. I'm going to put you on the spot as it relates to the Golf Hall of Fame and Justin Rose, 13-time PGA Tour winner now. He's won an Olympic gold. He's won a FedEx Cup. He's gotten to world number one. He's won a U.S. Open. Are you putting Justin Rose in the World Golf Hall of Fame, even if his PGA Tour win total does not quite match up to some of the other players who have gotten in?
I do not only just have 13 wins on the PGA Tour, it's 27 wins all over the planet. He's won on every continent except Antarctica. I think the Olympic medal, I think that is, you know, I mean, look, they weren't giving out Olympic medals when Freddie Couples was at his heyday, but he's in the World Golf Hall of Fame. I think he's been such a global ambassador for the game. And I think obviously, as he's proving now at the age of 45, he has longevity and he's a force. Top 10 player in the world at the age of 45, really hasn't let off since 2010 when he came out on the scene. And I think what doesn't get talked about a lot is the fact that where he has won, specifically on the PGA Tour, he shows up at big events on really hard golf courses and it excels, like Torrey Pines, like Cog Hill. Like Muirfield Village, he is a really challenging layout performer. And I think that speaks a lot of volume to those who've voted. And he's won on some iconic venues. Don't forget Pebble as well. So I think he belongs in the Hall of Fame, no doubt.
You look at what he's done. He's won twice now in his last two PGA Tour starts, going back to last year in Memphis. What's his ceiling at 45 years old? You pointed it out. Obviously, he's won on big events. Are we going to be surprised if he starts showing up at majors and contending more often now?
No. I mean, look at the major championship, including last year. He's shaken the hand of the eventual winner on the 18th green on Sunday three times. So Avichip is at Aronimink, where he has won. And he also lost in a playoff there another time to Keegan Bradley. And losing in that playoff, though, ascended him to number one in the world. So there's that. You go to the U.S. Open. He was in the next-to-last group at Shinnecock on Sunday the last time it was there. So he's got connectivity with that golf course. And, of course, we're going to World Birkdale this year, where he, you know, came out on the scene. It's in his home country of England. I think he could contend this year in a lot of those major championships, if not all of them. I mean, he may be on the short list of favorites for every one of those majors.
Tilu, obviously the big star attraction last week at Torrey Pines was the return of Brooks Koepka, the first time he played in a PGA Tour event since spring 2022. What was the Brooks show like last week? How do you think that he played? And I guess almost as just as important, how do you think the interaction was, not just between Brooks and his fellow players, but how was he received by everyone in sort of the golf ecosystem?
For Brooks Koepka, Rex, you were here too. You kind of sensed that emotion. When we talked earlier in the week, he was really, really nervous about that press conference that he had on Tuesday because he was not only addressing the media, but fans and his fellow tour players as well. And he knew he had to answer some tough questions. But I felt like he did so with humility and gratitude towards the PGA Tour for forging a path for him to come back. So once he got through that, then he kind of started thinking about, obviously, getting ready for this tournament. And that first day on Thursday, when he played the South Course, I mean, welcome back to the PGA Tour. Get your butt out here on one of the toughest tracks on the circuit. I think he was very nervous on that first tee. And I think mainly because he was unsure how the fans were going to receive him. Were they going to be cynical? Were they going to call him out? Were they going to heckle him? But I'm telling you, 99.9% of the time, actually, I didn't hear anything negative. I heard a lot of, well, welcome back, Brooks. Yeah, Brooksy, good to see you. And I think that was pretty emotional for him, too. I mean, you could tell in our live interview we did with him. He also had a post-round press conference on Thursday where he seemed emotional, too. So Thursday was a huge day as well. For him to make the cut and play four rounds and get his feet wet again. First time he's played a competitive event on a high level since the Dunhill last October on the DP World Tour. I think that was huge. I think that's a win for him. Are the things he needs to work on? Certainly his putting. His putting, he was not good on the green side this week, and he'll tell you that. His driver was okay. His iron game was pretty sharp, though. So he's got some building blocks that he can now go to Scottsdale with, where he has won before and probably will feel a little more comfortable, and I think will be received even from a louder perspective there, obviously. I mean, who knows? He could, I mean, I think he'll play better. I'll just say that. So I think it was a positive week for Brooks Koepka.
You talked about the reception from the fans, and I walked the grounds with them on Thursday. Certainly, it was a warm reception almost all the way around. What about from the players? What'd you hear from the players about this being his first event back? It kind of breaks that third wall when it comes to LIV and the PGA Tour. And what's the feeling?
Well, I mean, I don't know the actual number, but I'm going to guess, Rex and Ryan, that it's probably been about a 40% turnover since Brooks last played out here on the PGA Tour. As far as membership goes, they don't know him and he doesn't know them. So let's start there. But from what I saw, a lot of players came up to him, shook his hand, said, good to see him back. I think that they're okay with the consequences, the punishment, if you want to call it, that the PGA Tour is handing out to Brooks Koepka. And it was non-negotiable. This is happening. And he accepted it. And I think that's a positive. Look, Brooks Koepka was part of a group that helped fracture golf. There's no doubt about it. That's a fact. By going to LIV. But that was a while ago. You know, you hear the saying, time heals all wounds. I get all that. But these players are now playing for millions and millions and millions of dollars because of the collateral positivity, I guess, for the PGA Tour members of the fracture in golf. Because the PGA Tour had to count at LIV, and so all of a sudden, these players are playing for a lot more money on the PGA Tour. And the fact that they have equity in the tour now. So I don't think it's as bitter. The temperature is cooled down a lot now compared to 3, 4, 5 years ago. So, you know, I think it was a positive reception primarily from every player that I've seen on the PGA Tour.
How about 7 months from now, Tilu? Do you expect the same thing for when Patrick Reed returns to PGA Tour competition? Do you think his fellow players will be as accommodating, as welcoming, as understanding of a player who wants to come back to the PGA Tour after helping, as you put it, be a part of that fracture?
It's a good question. I mean, Patrick was a different player than Brooks Koepka. Patrick, he said some not so positive things as he left the PGA Tour. So I don't know how the membership will receive him. I will say, though, Patrick Reed, I think, in my opinion, a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, said maybe a couple of the most important sentences in this separation, in this battle between the PGA Tour and LIV Golf / the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia. When he said, quote, "We all know the PGA Tour is the best tour." That spoke volumes. I mean, huge volumes. First off, what does it say to the fans? That this is a LIV player saying, I've been out there, and it's not as good as the PGA Tour. The PGA Tour is the best. And as a matter of fact, I got a lot of heat, ridicule, heckling from the PGA Tour fans. Some of it deserved, for sure. But I'd rather go back to that than play on LIV Golf. That's huge. And secondly, what does it say to the players that are currently performing on LIV right now? Here's Brooks Koepka, one of their stars. I'm out of here. I'm going to go back to the PGA Tour. And now Patrick Reed, whatever you say about him, like him or not, he is uber competitive. And he says the best competition for me in my life is out on the PGA Tour. So I don't know how he's going to be received. He might be received warmly. But I think he made a big statement about where the PGA Tour is compared to LIV Golf right now.
Now, today is February 2nd. It's the deadline for those other three players who qualify under the returning member program. We're talking about Cam Smith, John Rahm, and Bryson DeChambeau. They don't anticipate any of those three committing at the deadline, but what did this program actually accomplish? As you pointed out, it brought back one of the biggest stars in the game, and we saw the impact it had this week at this event with Brooks playing.
Well, I think having Brooks Koepka back for sure, the PGA Tour has taken advantage. First and foremost, I think it is a big blow to LIV Golf from a competitive perspective. They suddenly did to LIV Golf what LIV Golf has done to them. And they have really tried to capitalize on it. I don't know how much you at home, how much the fans were watching, but I saw that PGA Tour commercial about where the best belong and Brooks Koepka's face on it a lot during the live tournament coverage. So they are into the marketing of Brooks Koepka coming back, putting him in feature groups. It's going to be a headline, a story heading into Scottsdale as well. So I think it's really an advantageous situation right now for the PGA Tour. Will John Rahm, Cam Smith, or Bryson DeChambeau come out in this window? I don't think so. I would be shocked, to be honest with you. But I bet they're thinking about it. I bet it wasn't an instant no. I bet they probably called their manager and said, "Is this possible? What do you think?" You know, and if not those three guys, maybe some other players as well on LIV. So it's definitely leverage right now for the PGA Tour.
I was just going to ask you about that, Tilu, because what does it say about those players? And they all have different contracts. They all have different loyalties. They all have different responsibilities. They all have different interests, quite frankly. Cam Smith said he's enjoying playing on LIV Golf, and he doesn't foresee a reason why he would come back to the PGA Tour. But for Bryson and John Rahm specifically, what do you think it says about them that they dangled this carrot, said, "Here's your get-out-of-jail-free card," and they decided not to take it and will now play on the LIV circuit through at least 2026?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know if they have the option to take it. I mean, I don't know how airtight the contract is they have. I don't know if they've had discussions with LIV or the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia about a possible exit. I mean, I'm sure there obviously is, but what would be the ramifications? What would be the consequences for that? I have talked to, Rex and Lav, I'm sure you have too. I have talked to people in the know in the golf circles where, John Rahm, really feels a little bit like he's off the grid. Bryson DeChambeau, he really likes to be an entertainer. And obviously, this is the best platform from an international perspective for him to be that entertainer / competitor. So it's, I don't know if they can come back, but I bet you they have thought about it. I bet you there's been discussions amongst these players and their management team about what's the best move for me next, and is it involving LIV Golf or the PGA Tour?
You brought up a great point about the impact that Brooks had on this tournament. The first two rounds on ESPN linear for the first time in two decades. You look at, they actually had, it seemed like, separate coverage during the CBS window of just Brooks's round. And he went off on the other side. He was so far out of contention. That's a huge impact. And we saw it on the grounds as well. I kind of compared Tuesday's press conference to what we used to see with Tiger Woods back in the day. Now, fast forward to next week in Scottsdale. You have Brooks and Scottie Scheffler. What do you think that dynamic's going to be like? And not just between those two players, but what it means to that tournament.
Well, I think they're two different lanes here. One, Brooks Koepka coming back to a place where he has won and feels comfortable. He's still, I think, shaking off some competitive rust. We saw that here at Torrey last week. I think the newness, the novelty of him coming back was kind of held in San Diego at Torrey Pines. Now it's the focus on where is he competitively. Well, we know where Scottie Scheffler is. no question about that. The question surrounding Scottie Scheffler is maybe we're getting close to the point where we used to do this with Tiger. You take Scottie or the field. We're not far from that, to be honest with you. They're just two different storylines. But I think they'll probably get about the equal amount of attention. Next week's a big week for Brooks. I mean, this was an emotional week. Next week, you really are going to find out where he's going to find out too, where his competitive game is on the PGA Tour.
Tilu, we'll get you out of here on this one. It's been 2 weeks on the road for you. Your family doesn't recognize you anymore. You've covered all of these stops previously and at some point in your career on the West Coast swing. We're halfway through it right now in Phoenix. What is your favorite West Coast swing spot and why?
Man, it puts me on the spot. Well, they're all great and they all have their own individual characteristics. First and foremost, let me just say this before I answer this question. Obviously, in Hawaii is fantastic. I hope we go back there. We'll see. But yeah, you know, Hawaii is Hawaii. It's beautiful weather. You're going to have it generally. In Palm Springs, 75 and sunny every day. This week was the best week I've ever seen at Torrey Pines. Mm-hmm. 75 and sunny every day. Ryan, you're in Scottsdale, right?
Yes.
You want to go ahead and give us the forecast for next week?
Hot. 80 and sunny, where I just came from Ponte Vedra, where it was a real feel of 5 degrees on Sunday morning.
I'm sure you'll take 80 in August in Memphis, yes. But try to suffer through that. What I'm trying to say is we have had beautiful weather. So you know what's going to happen? At Pebble Beach, the skies are going to open up. Yeah. Cats and squirrels are going to be flying around. But that leads me to Pebble Beach, and I have to say, I really enjoy going to Pebble Beach, and the weather is part of the story. I pack whatever I can. I mean, obviously, you know, we all know what it is. Pebble Beach is iconic. It's beautiful. But you look at the courses that play there, the uniqueness of the Pro-Am format for a couple of days, which is still there. Steve John is an incredible tournament director. I love going to Pebble Beach. It's on the West Coast. It's probably my favorite event.
Producer Fred, can you change the bottom lower third here? Todd Lewis likes Pebble Beach. Yes. That here, folks, that is breaking news. Thank you,
Sina.
I
like them all. That's not fair. You asked me to pick the best.
You hate Los Angeles? I don't understand.
Didn't even shout out Riviera, the best golf course on the
who's your favorite?
Schedule.
Who's your favorite son, Rex? You want to pick one?
Laugh.
Yes. See, Lou, thanks so much for the 2 weeks. I'm sure we'll be calling on you through the rest of 2026. Appreciate the time, buddy.
Love being with you guys. Thank you.
All right. After this break, we'll get into the mess that was the LPGA season opener and Patrick Reed. The aforementioned Patrick Reed make it a run. Once again, the DP World Tour. Hang with us. All right, Rex. Nelly Korda won the LPGA season opener in your hometown, Orlando, but somehow that was overshadowed. Winter weather, nasty winter weather, pushed back the start time for the pros, but the LPGA ultimately made the call to cancel the tournament in the final round, ending the tournament after 54 holes when, I don't know, Rex, Annika Sorenstam says the golf course was playable. The golf course superintendent said the golf course was playable. What say you?
It was felt like 12. I think you mentioned what it felt like when you left Ponte Vedra Beach on Sunday night. So it was really cold, unseasonably cold. I'm not sitting here making excuses. I know everyone in the Northeast is listening to this right now and probably throwing something at their laptop or their phone that we're even mentioning this. However, I'm not quite sure they could have started any earlier. I believe they started that the third round. They went off to complete the third round about 2 p.m. There was frost on the ground. It was not a good situation. I know you want to play 72. I know this was not the best case scenario, but sometimes you can't. And I don't think anybody's going to argue with a Nelly Korda victory.
No, you wouldn't argue with a Nelly Korda victory, but it's how we arrived at that point. I think that we would have an issue with. The LPGA said that they wanted, quote, optimal competitive environment. What the heck is that? Golf is a game of imperfect. And when you have the best players on the planet, you want to put them in an environment where they have to showcase their skills, where they are out of their protective cocoon that you typically get while playing in ideal conditions, traveling the sun as you do while playing professional golf. This was not the U.S. Women's Open. This was a Pro-Am style event to kick off the new LPGA year. To me, what a miss. It's not often that the women are on network television, and to have it go down in this manner where the LPGA wants, quote, optimal competitive environments, to me was a huge miss, big head scratcher, not a great start to the year for the LPGA. How about over on the DP World Tour, Rex, where a fellow by the name of Freddie Schott won in Bahrain, but this tournament is going to be remembered for two reasons. One, Patrick Reed, the week after signaling his intention to return to the PGA Tour later this year, rallied to make the playoff, ultimately lost, a nice result at the end of a headline-making week, but also for Callum Hill. If you somehow miss this, on the second playoff hole, I felt this deeply relatable, Rex, snap hooks his drive out of bounds, then with his fourth shot, after re-teeing, shanks it with his approach shot off electronic leaderboard into the water, ultimately concedes. The big picture, though, here, Rex, was Patrick Reed doing what he did. He's now number two in the season-long Race to Dubai standings, and that's going to be very important by year's end.
Got him close to the top 20 in the world ranking. I think we mentioned this last week when we kind of went through this. The idea, he almost seems like a lock now to get one of those top 10 cards coming from the DP World Tour going into the PGA Tour next year. And that's huge because it improves his status so much. If he was going to be playing out of the past champions category, he's going to get a handful of starts, probably not a lot. And if you're Patrick Reed, you probably should anticipate getting a lot of sponsor exemptions into events. So this is huge. I will say he's actually scheduled to play the Qatar Masters, I think, this week as well. That's four in a row. Man, that's a lot of golf. That dude is a warrior, if nothing else.
He is a warrior, and you're right. It's going to be so important for him to finish among that top 10. He would essentially then be Marco Penge at this point, who has a full card. He can play wherever he wants. He can play in his way into the signature events, a full-fledged member on the PGA Tour, as opposed to playing out of a lesser category. That past champion status doesn't quite hold as much appeal as it used to.
And it's important to point out, that's why if he does get into the top 20, if he keeps moving his way up the world ranking, suddenly the President's Cup comes into play. And suddenly we're talking about Captain America again. It was interesting. When we asked Brant Snedeker about this at Torrey Pines last week, the captain of the U.S. President's Cup team, he didn't even hadn't even heard the news yet. So this one is going to be one you have to probably keep an eye on.
Brooks Koepka, Patrick Reed, yeah, who could potentially see Captain USA back in the fold in a couple months' time at Medina. All right, Rex, it is WM Phoenix Open week. It's also Super Bowl week. A lot going on. Star-studded field at TPC Scottsdale. Brooks Koepka, Scottie Scheffler, Xander Schauffele, Jordan Spieth. What are you most interested in seeing? How those players perform on the loudest hole in golf, or how this guy performs on the loudest hole in golf? The first time I'll be doing interviews and reports for Golf Central. What do you think?
I have no interest in Scottie or Brooks or any of the rest of them. I want to see how you perform. I think the walk and talk interviews are going to be fantastic. You and I spend a lot of time on the podcast talking about how demanding they are, and it kind of puts you in a position where you have to stay on your toes. You're going to do awesome. But yes, obviously I'm going to be paying attention to you. It's going to be a fun week, but you had to pick the loudest, the most raucous, the craziest week on the PGA Tour to make your debut. Good for you. Well done.
Well, I tend to bring down the age demographic, or at least I could be closer in line to the folks who do line the 16th hole. It's going to be a lot of fun. Never done it before. Fingers crossed I don't completely embarrass myself. I think we have like a pro-am show on Wednesday, so hoping to snag some great celebrities. I saw Travis Kelce. I should ask him, as my wife said, to see if he has any summer plans, i.e. Getting married to the one and only Taylor Swift. Also, the walk and talks, the other interviews. It's going to be a fun week on Golf Channel. Make sure you guys are locked in for that. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. You guys know the drill. GolfChannel.com for all the latest news, notes, and updates. Rex and I will be back on Wednesday for another edition of the pod. Be sure to check out Golf Channel. It's going to be an interesting week.